The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from National Geographic and the New York Times. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. So, please join us. And on today's Armchair Traveler, we head first to the Lone Star State to visit a place called Marfa, Texas. Now, writer Shannon Sims' article is part of the New York Times ongoing travel series, 36 Hours. In this series, writers describe a weekend visit to some of their favorite destinations. And Shannon's story appeared in the April 24th, 2025 issue of the Times. So we're heading to Marfa, Texas now, okay? And by the way, Shannon is a Texan and a longtime contributor to the travel section. And she is based in Houston, Texas. Deep in the high desert of far west Texas, an hour's drive from the Mexican border, sits a little jewel, Marfa. The rural town of less than 2,000 residents, about 3 hours from El Paso or Midland, is a former water stop along the railroad that runs across Texas. Now, despite its remoteness over the past half century, Marfa has become one of the country's top art towns, set off by the 1971 arrival of the artist Donald Judd, who found inspiration in the area's stirring bleakness. Now, today, the town offers a siren song to travelers intrigued by its blend of dusty cowboy culture, highbrow art, and wide-open horizon, including those tacking Marfa onto a trip to Big Bend National Park. Now, the walkable town, which stays relatively cool thanks to an altitude not much lower than Denver's, boasts artistic riches and quirky shops, plus nationally acclaimed restaurants. You can consider the celestial calendar before booking a trip. The area is known for having some of the darkest skies in the country, and you can expect to leave Marfa starstruck. Now, there are some recommendations about stops. Among them is the Kinati Foundation, a contemporary art museum, showcases the work of the artist Donald Judd and his contemporaries. And then we have an evening at Star Party in the open-air arena of the University of Texas's McDonnell Observatory, located in the Davis Mountains, north of Norfa. Astronomers here take visitors on a tour through the night sky via laser light. And then you have downtown Marfa, a walkable heart of town, brims with modern art galleries and unique stores. As far as getting around goes, well, to get across the great expanse of far western Texas, most people drive to Marfa. Many of the area's best sites, like the McDonnell Observatory or the Marfa Lights, are mostly easily reached by car. It's about a three-hour drive to either El Paso or Midland commercial airports, and airport shuttles to Marfa can be arranged. All Aboard America Bus Company operates a route that connects the Midland Airport to Marfa, and there is an Amtrak train station in Alpine, which is a 25-minute drive away. Now, Uber operates, if slowly in town, and they have a list of local rideshare providers available online, so if you just Google that, you'll find it. And it's also kept on the city's website. Now, within the town of Marfa, everything is in walking or biking distance. And by the way, Marfa is M-A-R-F-A, so if you need to Google that, you can. Now, we're going to begin our itinerary for our 36-hour visit. It starts on a Friday afternoon. We're going to be looking at the Judd Foundation Artist Rights Society, or ARS, which is based in New York. Now, we are in Marfa for this. It's 2:30 p.m., so let's meditate with 100 boxes, as the headline says. In the 1970s, the American artist Donald Judd moved to Marfa and redefined the town, turning it into an art destination. He created the Chinati Foundation, a contemporary art museum that highlights his work, along with that of his contemporaries, including the sculptor John Chamberlain and the light artist Dan Flavin. More recent artists exhibited include the photographer and sculptor Zoe Leonard. Now, tours are available, but the works you'll see vary, so call the foundation to find out more. By the way, it's $15 to $30 with reservation. A popular Judd installation is inside artillery hangars once used by German prisoners of war. His 100 untitled works in mill aluminum, in essence, row upon row of metal boxes, reflect the natural light in intriguing ways, creating a meditative experience. It's the perfect way to quiet the mind and embrace Marfa's slow pace. Well, let's see here. It's 5 o'clock now. Time to get happy hour downtown. So set the unplugged Marfa mood by enjoying a drink and live music at one of the courtyard tables at Jet's Grill in the Hotel Passano. Now you can try the Carajillo for $14, a chilled coffee cocktail, or a prickly pear Moscow mule for $14. Now, just around the corner, sample hard-to-find Texas wines like an orange muscat from the High Plains. That's $22 a bottle. And a nibble on dressed-up plates of tinned fish from $16 and up at Alta Marfa. In the morning, it's a coffee shop called Mutual Friends, but in the evening, it transforms into a casual wine bar. If you prefer your beverages to go, don't miss Cactus Liqueurs, a delightful local liquor store with an excellent selection of Mexican mezcals, a great Marfa souvenir. Now, on to 7 p.m., we're going to sample some invasive antelope and wild boar. Arrive hungry at the Chochinillo, the most acclaimed restaurant in town. Some people visit Marfa just to taste delicate plates of local protein by the executive chef, Alexandra Gates, a James Beard Award semifinalist several times over. Try the tartar of wild-hunted Nagai antelope for $28, and crispy trout with artichokes and lemon, that's $36 on the menu, or go all in on the chef's tasting menu for $125, which can feature quail and Texas wild boar. Don't miss the artisan bread course served with garlic confit and sage salt, $12 a quarter loaf, which has earned a fanatical following. The meat-forward menu includes vegan options like a local mushroom risotto for $34 and a chai custard for $16. And reservations should be made far ahead of time. Pick a table in the gravel courtyard for a breezy evening. On to 9 p.m. Friday night and squint for magical ghost lights. Are they real or imagined? Whether or not you're a believer, attempting to view the Marfa lights is a popular, almost essential experience in far west Texas. About a 10-minute drive out of town along the side of the highway, there's an outdoor viewing area, it's free, where you can sit on benches and gaze across the prairie to see what's out there. Those who claim to have seen the lights, including many locals, describe them as ethereal orbs of white, blue, yellow, or red that may wobble, conjoin, or split, and that are best seen during the hour before sunrise or the hour after sunset. More concrete thinkers say they're caused by highway headlights distorted in the dry desert air. There's no guarantee of a sighting, and that's part of the fun. Even if you don't see the Marfa lights from a viewing station along Highway 90, the view of the Cathedral Mountain is worth the drive. On to Saturday now, and Ramona Tejeda serving up a burrito at 8:30 p.m., belly up for burritos, as a matter of fact. Behind a scraggly wall just south of town sits one of Marfa's most popular breakfast joints and a place where the town's proximity to the Mexican border can be felt. Led by the charismatic Ramona Tejeda, whose face is plastered on a cheeky poster with the greeting, Hola, chicos guapos. Hello, handsome guys. Well, Marfa Burritos turns out simple but tasty breakfast burritos with ingredients like red sauce pork asado for $10 or egg and chorizo for $9. Now, vegetarians can customize this if you like. It may seem like an undiscovered dive, but it's been visited by celebrities like Matthew McConaughey and Anthony Bourdain. Sit in the homey dining room or chat with locals in the front as you wait for your breakfast to go. Need something stronger than drip coffee? Well, you can check out Coyote Coffee, which is just down the road. Now on to some ceramics by Mimi e Roberto at Garza Marfa. Now this is a 10 a.m. venture, and we're going to shop around and grab a bite. Downtown Marfa offers numerous eccentric shops and high-quality art galleries, but most galleries open at noon, so shop first. Reba Marfa sells hard-to-find Western wear, both vintage orange cowboy boots for $200 and new Mongolian sheep jacket for $800. Now, Garza Marfa offers Southwestern home goods like striped desert blankets for $230 and saddle leather armchairs that start at $2,500. Yes. Pick up some local literature or work on a puzzle at Stop and Read Books. For accessories like bolo ties and belt buckles, try Texas Rose. If you're feeling peckish, grab a jalapeno chicken sandwich from Astor Cafe and Bakery. It's $17. Or maybe a garlicky kale and ricotta cheese from Para Havar for $18. Now, it's 2 p.m. in the afternoon Saturday, and we're going to explore history and modern art. In the early 20th century, Mexican-American children were segregated from their white counterparts and educated in Marfa's Blackwell School. In 2022, the Adobe Schoolhouse became a National Historic Site open to visitors. Then pivot into an exploration of Marfa's art galleries, many of which are only open on Saturdays from noon to 5 p.m. Pick up a free Marfa Gallery Guide available at many local businesses and take a stroll around town. With rotating exhibitions at most stops, you never know what you'll find. Rule Gallery and Wrong Marfa are two small standouts. The most memorable might be the Ballroom Marfa, a multi-space gallery that helped commission Prada Marfa, an art installation 30 minutes outside of town that's a faux outlet of the luxury brand, complete with shoes on display. Now, on the road to the Prada Marfa is the artist John Cerny's roadside giant Marfa mural. It depicts scenes from the movie. Now it's 6 p.m. and time to saddle up to a horseshoe bar. Although it's on the first floor of a downtown historic building, dinner at Margaret's in Marfa feels more like eating on Grandma's porch, complete with clattering wood-framed screen door. The food is suitably homey yet elevated. Deviled eggs take a delicious dip in beet brine. That'll cost you $9. Then there's braised cabbage, gets kicked up by the garlic chili oil. That's only $10. And then you have a classic bolognese pasta, benefits from rich 100% Texas beef for $19. Although there are tables, Margaret's horseshoe-shaped bar acts as the communal gathering table where visitors and locals rub shoulders and share tips about their favorite art galleries. For a solo traveler, it's a gold mine. Now it's 8:45 p.m., about to attend a star party since it's Saturday night. In the Davis Mountains, about a 45-minute drive, best accompanied by the sounds of Marfa Public Radio, the University of Texas's McDonald Observatory is a great way to experience the dark skies of rural far west Texas and learn about astronomy at the same time. On many weekend nights, the observatory hosts a two-hour star party for $25, where visitors settle into an open-air amphitheater for an engaging, laser-like guided tour through the stars. Afterward, check out the various telescopes focused on planets and other celestial bodies. Experts are on hand to answer any questions. Well, it's on to 11 p.m., and we're going to orbit Marfa's favorite planet. If you hear music breaking the nighttime silence of Marfa, it's probably drifting from Planet Marfa, an outdoor live music venue that turns into Marfa's gathering spot on weekend evenings. It's the kind of place where you're likely to see your lunchtime waiter or tour guide. The hideout has multiple environments, like a room filled with games, a wigwam with an underground ping pong table, and many cozy canoodling corners. The music varies as much as the space. One evening might feature a DJ playing EDM. The next might turn into a cumbia dance party. Now, the kitchen offers a small menu of late-night munchies like roasted vegetable pizza for $15 and Nutella with mascarpone sandwiches for $8. Plus, the peanuts are free. Now, on to Sunday and our final day there, and we're going to start off at 10 a.m. with the Judd Foundation Artist Rights Society, and we're going to walk the block while the Chinati Foundation highlights the work of Judd, his contemporaries, and newer artists. The Judd Foundation focuses on preserving preserving his living and working spaces. Even if you're not a Judd fan, the La Manzana de Candati, the block, is a fascinating display of what artists can do when the wide-open spaces of Marfa allow them to stretch. In the shadow of a historic industrial feed mill, surrounded by a wall made of adobe bricks, Judd, who died in 1994, turned an entire block into his home and studio. During a guided tour, it's $30 for 1 hour and 45 minutes of touring. Visitors see his vast libraries, his bedroom, and many of his three-dimensional works. Then we stop at 12 p.m. for Michael Anthony Serva, Transport to Italy. Most people don't travel to far west Texas for perfectly sliced prosciutto or creamy stracciatella, which is what makes Bordeaux such a blissful find. Run by the chef owner Michael Anthony Serva, the restaurant makes its own pasta, $14 a bag dried if you want to take some home, and a gelato for $6 a scoop, and wood fires bread in the dining room. Now, with lunch-only hours and a focus on sandwiches, the restaurant slash deli seems casual enough. The former service station embraces Marfa's hardscrabble aesthetic of corrugated and cafeteria trays, but the food, like a sandwich of prosciutto cotto and gorgonzola, is $14, or a radiatore pesto pasta with fresh ricotta for $15. It's all extraordinary, and word's getting out this year that the James Beard Foundation ranked Mr. Serva among the top chefs in the country, so you're going to eat some fine food there. And there you go. So that's our visit to Marfa. Hope you enjoyed that quick snapshot tour. Maybe you'll think about heading there. Well, from far west Texas, let's cross the Atlantic and head for Eastern Europe now to hear about finding tranquility in Transylvania. Writer Brett Martin's story appeared in the July 2025 issue of National Geographic. As the graphic caption reveals, in a corner of rural Romania, a bucolic way of life is safeguarded by a community preserving its ancient ways and offering a template for a richer way of living. So you're going to get a first-hand view in this article of what life's really like in Romania, and it probably doesn't bear much resemblance to what you might see in some of the vampire movies that you may think about. So let's get started. On a chilly twilight evening, three men sit around a wood table in the parsonage of a 13th century church in Transylvania. Outside are ducks, beehives, and a shaggy white dog that we can hear barking at something in the growing dark. Warmed by a wood-burning stove, the men sip tea and nibble savory pretzel-shaped cookies and talk about their home, which is quite a name here. It takes up almost a whole page. Carasone Falba. Transylvania. Is there a better-known place name and a lesser-known place? Perhaps Timbuktu. Even when all of Europe was wilder, Transylvania stood for its wildest edge. This is why Bram Stoker saw fit to use it as a setting for Dracula, despite never setting foot there. It's a place where Saxons, Huns, Turks, Tartars, and a dozen less famous tribes are still talked about as if they may have passed through just last week. A place where the forests are still filled with bears. Now that Europe, for all its charms, can sometimes seem like a continent of mobile phone executives, it feels even more thrilling and unlikely to find oneself in a pocket as remote and in many ways untouched as this village in the valley of the Homorod River. Now, like about 85% of the people who live in this region of central Romania, and this is a rural region, I might add, the men at the parsonage table speak in Hungarian. They are CKs, and that's an ethnic Hungarian who have lived here for at least 1,000 years. And at the head of the table, with a short gray beard and bright, mischievous eyes, is 70-year-old Urban Saba, the man whose vision is helping preserve this distant place, even as the modern world presses at its borders. Now, Orban, in Hungarian, family names come before given names, does so as the leader of the Kocsberkasag, the village's governing body. It's a centuries-old form of communal land ownership and management that has helped make this place the singular. And the Kocsberkasag, and actually, let me give you a better pronunciation. It's Kocsberkasag, Kus Bir To Kug Shug. It helps if you take a running start. Ooh, and it does. Like I said, it covers a whole page, or at least a full sentence there. It manages the water, the woods, the pastures, splitting the uses and resources and income among 347 shareholders. Though time-worn, the system of governance is remarkably sturdy, Orban points out, and capable of meeting the needs of the people here. When winter comes, he says, everybody has enough wood. That it exists at all is a testament to the Orban vision. For the decades that Romania was under the communist rule, the Kazakh Borto Kazakh was lost. Indeed, the infamous dictator Nicolae Ceausescu aimed to wipe out places like Caravaksone Fava and their ways of life. He failed, communism fell, and the village remained in communal control of some 2,700 acres of land in the year 2000. Key to the Kurzbaktul Kasag's restoration were written records of the intricate system through which land rights have been passed down for generations. Orban opens a leather valise and carefully lifts out a thick folder of papers. Each page contains two columns of neatly written names with numbers next to them, a 1936 record of the shareholders of the Caravaksone Fava's Kurzbaktul Kazak. It was pages like these, hidden away in the houses and buried in archives, that aided the long legal fight of Orban and other Kurzbaktul Kazakh leaders to reclaim their villages after Ceausescu's overthrow in 1989. Orban remembers sifting through the mountains of documents in a government office and coming up with his list. It was like thunder, he says. Not even in our deepest dreams could we have hoped to restore what we had. Joining Orban at the table is Zimpali Geza, 75. He's the lay leader of the Unitarian Church. The younger man sitting next to him, Benedek Mihaly, is its minister. Now, Orban finds a page from a second list of names, this one from 1946, and points to line 165. It's inscribed there the name of Zimpali's grandfather. When I look around the table, all three men are blinking back tears. Caravaksone Fava, and it is called Crosinunal in Romanian, is tucked within a rolling Tuscany-like hills and swaths of deep forest, part of a string of villages, each marked by the needle-like spire of a Unitarian church. Its houses are topped with roofs of brush-colored tile. Many featured so-called Sikhe gates and carved wooden entrances that depict Sikhe iconography and runes that are capped with structures reminiscent of a Japanese pagoda. From the courtyards within, you can hear bleats of sheep and squawking of chickens. Most families do at least some subsistence farming. Electrical poles are topped by the donut-shaped hats of stork's nest. Now, one afternoon, I step aside as a raucous herd of cows is paraded down the middle of the street, spurred by young men with sticks and shouts. It should also be noted that the village has faster internet and generally better roads than I do at home in New Orleans. Orban Saba commands obvious respect through the village, but is also considered something of an eccentric. The heads of the other Kurzbaktul Kazakhs can often identify by their expensive cars and big-shot attitudes. Well, Orban drives a beat-up hatchback and dreams up projects. There's the traditional open-air bath that he renovated in 2019 as a gathering place, complete with a medicinal herb garden and fire pit for making tea. Across the village, in the shadow of the forest, is the sweet chestnut orchard, where he organizes an annual chestnut festival. And there's the Kurzbaktul Kazakh Community Center. On a Saturday afternoon while I'm there, the village gathers in traditional dress to enact a children's wedding in which a local girl and boy play bride and groom before a great feast. Orban's car is a constant state of reminding him to buckle his seatbelt as he careens down dirt roads from one place to the next. All of the projects, he says, are attempts to maintain the traditions of this place while also cautiously opening it to the possibilities of ecotourism. Orban often explains this careful balancing act through an emblem depicting the Sikhe sun and moon standing independent within the European Union's circle of stars. Above all, because Berktu Kossag's acts as a steward of the village's most important resource, the forest, which is both a source of crucial fuel, as a few nervous nights feeding the guest house wood stoves drives home, and fragile to biodiversity. On a rainy day, I am taken into the woods by a hunter, an ingenious tinker named Asai Matas. He's invited me to tag along on his daily visit to check the 3 motion-activated cameras he uses to monitor wildlife. We bounce up and down deeply rutted trails in the all-terrain vehicle that we're using. And he's fashioned this from an old Land Rover, and then we hike in silence afterward, trailed by a stout fox that Osi has grown to know and has named Vuki. Aside from the songbirds, Vuki is the only living thing we encounter. But back at the Aussie's house, where my boots are drying over the wood stove, we review the photos he's retrieved. They show deer, wild boars, all manner of small mammals, and many, many bears. I shiver thinking of them all having been hidden around us as we moved through their woodland home just a few hours earlier. What is special here is that the community owns the land, says C.K. Kinkareka, a Unitarian minister several villages away. Nobody can get too wealthy that they make other people suffer. The irony, of course, is that such principles resemble nothing so much of those of communism with a small c. We hate that word, but it's true, Z.K. admits. We already had that system for 1,000 years. We didn't need them to come and tell us. I am at C.K.'s home for the annual ritual of slaughtering a pig to be eaten over the course of the rest of the year. By the time I arrive, the animal's still steaming body has been splayed across a table outside. A round-faced butcher deftly works at disassembling it. Prime cuts go into brine, later to be smoked, while organs and other offal head to a temporary sausage factory set up in the dining room. Excess sausages will be distributed among neighbors who in turn will share their own surplus when the time comes. ZK's husband, Zot Zaba, a computer coder, distributes morning shots of palinka, a homemade brandy they prepared from plums. My generation is the last one that understands the meaning of butchering the pig, he laments. What is the meaning, I ask? That you eat what you grow, he says, that you know where it came from, that you are connected. On the ZK's wall, as in many homes in the region, hangs a map showing Transylvania as part of the greater Austro-Hungarian Empire. It is a good reminder that, as this place knows all too well, there is no hiding from the tides of history. Winters are getting warmer. The past 2 summers have brought drought. A new Romanian nationalism is on the rise, potentially threatening the country's ethnic minorities. In the villages of the Homarad Valley, you see children and older people, but in few in between. Many young adults have left in search of jobs or PhDs or just an easier life than farming. ZK Zotksaba has been forced to bring in Nepalese workers to help staff one of the small groceries that he owns. In the face of all that, what Orban Saba and the Kosberg Kasag do is a model of tending one's own garden, attempts to protect and sustain family community and the gifts of this small corner of the planet that they know better than anyone else. At the parsonage table, Orban packs up his stack of documents and places them carefully back in their valise. He pats it lovingly, puts it under his arm. It would be nice to know who is going to hold this next. Quite an interesting discovery there of what Romania life in the rural areas is really like, huh? Well, that's about it for today's Armchair Traveler. We've run out of time, I'm afraid, but we do hope you've enjoyed listening and that you'll join us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I must remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice, all one word, .org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.